I'm calling our meeting to order here at 4 minutes past 9, January 28th, 2010. At this time, if you haven't already done so, please turn off any electronic devices. Please let the record reflect that to my right, Senator French is here, Senator Myers, I'm Senator Menard. To my left is Senator Pascovan as well as Senator Al Kukesh. I'd also like to introduce my committee aides, Sarah Wilson. Senate Bill 184, Internet Access to Legislative Committee Meetings. This morning we'll begin with that. And is the sponsor of the bill ready to? And you want? Did you want to sit
there? I'll move over there.
That's good. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you and good morning. For the record, I'm Hollis French. I represent State Senate District M. And with me is Kate Herring from my office, who is the aide charged with making everything happen here today except for me saying a few words. Okay. So after I say those words, I'll turn it over to Kate and some other folks, and they'll show you some of the things that this idea can do. But just as by way of introduction, Senate Bill 184 comes to you because, in my view, and I think in the view of many Alaskans, bringing the capital to Alaska is best done through the Internet. No matter where in the state you put the capital, given Alaska's vast geographic distances, some parts of the state are going to be remote from and inaccessible to the capital. And so instead of trying to bring the state to the capital, I think the next best thing is to push the capital out to the state. And this idea is one way of making that happen. Through simple, inexpensive, and reliable technology, web cameras, every single committee room in this building should be feeding a stream of information to the laptops and the handheld computers of the state. In my pocket, turned off under your instructions, is a little communication device. And I think you can foresee a day when citizens across the state can watch what's happening in this capital over their cell phones and over their PDAs. And that's really the sum and substance of the idea. As it happens, I filed this bill last spring towards the end of the session, and around that time the Legislative Council became interested in the idea as well. And over the summer, working with the Legislative Information Office, they've made great strides in beginning to implement this idea. And so with your permission, I'll turn it over to them. Sue Gullifson from the LIO is here to show you some of the things that they've been able to achieve by beginning to implement this idea.
Okay, sounds good. Are there any questions at this point? Okay. And is this a good time to bring Sue up then? And
I think so. Sue? Okay. Yep, great. Thanks.
State your name and affiliation for the record, Sue,
you bet.
Please.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Sue Gullifson. I'm the manager of the Information and Teleconference Network, Legislative Affairs Agency. And the senator did a great job introducing this, so I can skip some of my notes here. We did get permission from the Senate and House Rules Committee chairs last year to implement this pilot project, and we got some funding from, or permission to use some funds from Legislative Council for consulting fees, that sort of thing, which I'm happy to say we did not use, because my crack IT staff back here developed it in-house. We have Jake Carpenter and Tim Powers back here from the LIO office.
If you have any appreciate your skills.
And if you have any technical questions later, we can bring them up. We did outfit two committee rooms, one House room, and you're seeing the House Hess room, right? Well, you're seeing it back there. I'm seeing it up here. This is live, and I'll turn it on. We've got it on pause right now, but this is a live stream right now out of House Hess. It's actually the House State Affairs Committee meeting this morning. You'll see the testifiers in the small screen, and the other cameras focused on the committee itself. We've also outfitted the Butrovich room with two cameras, one focused again on the testifiers table and one focused on the committee itself. This feed is tied into our teleconference feed so that when it goes, when the committee goes at ease or they adjourn, this goes off The audio does not go out of the room after that, so if you're having private conversations during an at ease or, you know, afterwards, the audio feed will be cut off, much the same as the K2 feed. When we turn off the audio, everything is cut off. These are not, I'd like to note that these are not high quality cameras. They're actually webcams. They're not like these cameras that K2 uses for gavel to gavel. So the quality on the internet isn't going to be, you know, TV production quality, but it's still quite good. We've been testing it so far, and it comes across quite well. I turned this on, but we're going to hear their voices, so I think it'll be distracting right now. If successful and everybody's happy with this year, then we'll ask for funding next interim from Legislative Council or if this bill became law, would be go through the Finance Committee to outfit the other 7 committee rooms in the Capitol building, and then we would have every room covered, and anybody could have access over the internet to any committee meeting that was being held during session. The only difference between what we're doing and what's in the bill is that we do intend to archive all the video and audio. If this bill became law, I appreciate the fact that it does not mandate this, but we intend to do that so people can go back and look at the video and listen to the audio of any committee meeting that takes place during session. I think that's helpful for committee aides and people following legislation if they can't watch it live.
Scary to politicians.
Okay, so just if you indulge me for a minute, we'll just listen to the meeting and watch as we go. We don't have the audio wired into the screen yet, so looks like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
Okay, they've gone at ease.
I was just thinking it'll be our luck. They're going to take it at ease.
So we did prepare a fiscal note. If this bill were to become law, we would need another $56,000 to outfit the other 7 committee rooms. I could break that down into, you know, what that's for if you wish, but I would be asking for a part-time staff person, as this requires, especially if there's 9 rooms being covered, there'd be some monitoring that would need to be done. I welcome you to come up and see. We have a new media services office on the second floor of the Terry Miller building that these guys have set up. We have a photography studio, you know, to have your, you know, professional pictures taken, that sort of thing, but also the monitoring station so we can look at all 9 rooms should that happen. But I'll need extra staff to do that because it's going to be a lot of work. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from my colleagues? Senator French, did you want to add anything?
No, I know there's some folks who want to testify about the bill, but I think Ms. Gullison's done a great job of telling us about what's possible if just forge ahead.
Yes, we really appreciate the new technology. Thank you.
Yeah, great. And if I could ask the chair after we're done with this bill if we could have, you know, a short at ease so we can get the gaffer tape up and move the laptop out of here.
Certainly. Would it be more helpful now to?
Probably after the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now I think off that we have, as we move forward with Senate Bill 184, let's hear some testimony here from Matt Wallace.
Hey, I'm on the line.
Okay. Would you go ahead and state your name, please, and your affiliation for our record?
Sure. For the record, Matt Wallace with the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or ACPIRG. You know, others have already, I think, covered the bases on what this would do. ACPIRG, for those that don't know, is a statewide, citizen-oriented, nonprofit and nonpartisan public interest advocacy group. We are in full support of this notion, whether it, you know, the end result comes to pass via legislation or just via the good effort of staff working on it. Both for, you know, my own selfish purposes and those who, you know, work in the outside of the Capitol to be able to more closely monitor what goes on. but also for citizens who you know very well may want to check in and watch the proceedings of the state as they happen, but may not actually be able to on a regular basis. And I think that it's just absolutely true the more that we can encourage that participation and that monitoring of the political process by citizens, the better things will be, and the more sunshine we can get on the process, the better. So I'll leave my comments there. We think it's a great notion, a great idea, and we certainly encourage it to happen as soon as, and quickly as possible. And the only thing I'd add is that we also, and I haven't seen those technical specifications for what's there yet, but would encourage, as this process moves forward, if it does, to use open and cross-platform standards wherever possible to make sure that the most people using the widest range of technology can take advantage of this.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day, Matt. And I wanted to ask my colleagues if they had any questions this time. Okay, then thank you, Matt, for your testimony today. Now we'll have Arliss, our famous Arliss Sturgilewski, is online to testify. Arliss, are you there? This is Linda.
Good morning. This is Arliss Sturgilewski, and past member of the legislature. But may I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Yeah, just very briefly. I think this is legislation, and certainly the action by your legislative staff is built upon past actions to make government more accessible, and heaven knows we need that now. I think it's a good step to further maximize citizens' access to their legislative decision makers. I think that Gavel to Gavel is an excellent resource. I think, though, that residents want and welcome information. I would make just one little pitch, and that would be that, and this is not in the legislation, but it makes such good sense, that legislators in their letters to constituents and other ways make it easy for people to understand just where they can get information. There's a lot of newbies to the whole public process, older citizens, and I work a lot with them in various, wearing various nonprofit hats. They're just kind of coming into the computer age, and they don't have all the answers of where you go and how you access it. So congratulations to the senator for putting this legislation in. I think it's a good step, and it is joining a crowd of movement to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. And does anyone have any questions of the esteemed Arliss Sturgilewski? Table? No. Thank you, Arliss.
Good. Thank you. Have a good day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Next, I don't believe there's any more off net to testify, so we'll go to Clark Greening, yeah, sorry. Come forward, please, and state your name and affiliation.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Clark Greening. I'm here on behalf of the City and Borough of Juneau and the Alaska Committee, and I'll explain a little of that as we go forward. I know if Arliss is still on, but thank you for testifying. You've always worked for citizen access, and that's what this bill is about. Juneau supports Gavel to Gavel, which you're familiar with, and the Alaska Committee does as well, which is funded in large part, not entirely, by the City and Borough of Juneau, and the committee, made up of citizens, has worked over the years to improve access to the people's capital. On a personal note, I was looking at the floor today, and I'd have to say, the first time I ever danced with a girl was probably in this room, because the DeMaloy dances were here, and I wanted to compliment the legislature on the wonderful job they did in renovating this building. It's a beautiful addition to the Capitol, and I'm glad that we're actually dealing with this bill right in this room. You probably have in your packet a letter from KTOO, which is the force behind Gavel to Gavel, and they're certainly in support. Bill Legere couldn't be here today, but certainly since the city and the OISC committee support this effort, Gavel to Gavel is a wonderful addition, but is not in every room simultaneously. And so while you can watch whatever the menu is for the day, it would be great. And I think this will lead to having every committee accessible through the internet. And this is a great step in that direction. And certainly you can look to the City and Borough of Juneau and to the OISC committee to support that effort in any way we can. I don't have much to add to that unless there are any questions.
Does anyone have questions of Mr. Greening? Okay, thank you very much, Clark.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify at this time? I would give you that opportunity to come forward. Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. What is the will of the committee of this bill? Do I hear a motion?
May I ask a technical question?
Yes. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's not really a technical question, but it's about as technical as I can get in the subject. I'm just curious, in order to see this on my home computer, on my laptop, my whatever I have, gadget, do you have to add additional memory or
megabytes?
Will it come across real slow? Will it be real time, etc.?
Really quickly, Jake Carpenter. I work in the Legislative Information Office. Through the chair, what we use is called Flash, which you may be familiar with. It's what a lot of modern websites use, YouTube, Hulu, things like that. It's the same technology. And most people, whether it be Mac or a PC, have that installed and have the capability to watch video. Since we're not dealing with high definition or broadcast video, most computers out there should be able to view this. What is the biggest catching point is that people who are on a dial-up internet or a slow connection probably won't get the quality of service that we would in one of the major cities. Though after the meetings, they'll be downloadable, so people could watch them on their desktop.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I understand what you're saying, and if I didn't have a 1990 computer, this wouldn't be a problem. I need to upgrade.
Through the chair, that's correct.
It's not quite that old, but
it's time, Senator Meyer. It's time. It's time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions? Okay. Do I hear a motion then to move Senate Bill 184 from committee with individual recommendations?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 184 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Do I hear any objections? Okay. Hearing none, Senate Bill 184 moves out of State Affairs to Finance.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Welcome. Okay, we're just going to take a brief at ease so we can sign. Thank you. Senate Bill 194, Civil Damages for Alcohol Violations, is our next bill that we'll be dealing with. But first, there's a committee substitute which adds an amendment to the original bill. Do I have a motion to adopt CSSB 194 version R for the purpose of discussion?
Sure. Madam Chair, I would move that we bring and substitute before this committee CS for Senate Bill 194, and I have the /R version in front of me, and I believe that's the working copy that we have before us.
Okay. Thank you. This bill is sponsored by Senator Meyer, and Senator, would you like to take the seat? And
well, I think, Madam Chair, I'll just stay here.
Okay.
But I'll have, if with your permission, I have my trusty staff take the hot seat.
Okay, Christine, would you come forward and state your name and who you're affiliated with?
I'll go ahead and introduce the bill.
Okay.
And then she'll be there for questions.
Okay. Can I get her on record, though, please?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Christine Marisigan, staffer to Senator Kevin Meyer.
Thank you, Christine. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Kevin Meyer, and I represent South Anchorage Senate District O. And I'm here to introduce Senate Bill 194, which increases the civil damages from $1,000, which is what it currently is, to $1,500. This bill basically, and that's all this bill does, this is currently in statute, the ability to have civil penalties is currently at $1,000. And at the request of some businesses and CHAR, they've asked us to bump this up to $1,500, and I'll explain why that is. They've also asked that we add a provision for alcohol training, which is an optional thing, because on a civil penalty, the courts can't require that, but they can certainly
recommend
it. Yes, and that, and of course we think that that's a good idea. This thought, this process here originated when I was actually on the Anchorage Assembly back in the 1990s, and a couple establishments, primarily Brown Jug and Chilkoot Charlie's at that time, were frustrated because they were capturing these kids' fake IDs as they were coming into their establishments, would turn it over to the APD, and APD was getting so many of them in the city of Anchorage that nothing was happening on the criminal side. And of course, establishments who do serve kids who are under age 21, they have a lot to lose. I mean, not only will they get fined substantially, but they could lose their liquor license. So they wanted some kind of enforcement in place there to again deter kids from even trying to get access to alcohol. And of course, that is something again when I was on the assembly that we wanted to do. And then when I was elected to the State House here, we had some establishments in Fairbanks who said, "Hey, that's a great idea. We'd like to do that up here too." So we made it a statewide law back in 2001. Now, of course, like anything else, over a 10-year period, which is about what it is, the costs have gone up. And so what we're going to hear today is that that it's the $1,000 doesn't cover all the costs involved in trying to hunt down these kids, go through the civil action process, and so that's why they're asking for us to bump this up to $1,500. Now, obviously, too, when the word gets out on the street to the kids, say, hey, you know, if you even try to buy, not only they're going to notify your parents, but now you're going to have to pay $1,500 instead of $1,000. I think it will serve as a deterrent to the kids, because the word gets out on the street pretty quick that, you know, don't even try. And it's not in the packet, but I've read that, you know, when they've surveyed kids, how do you get alcohol, how do you get access to it? Most of them will say that they get older kids to buy it for them. You know, they're not trying themselves, which is good. Now, of course, older kids buying for younger kids is a different problem and a different issue. But at least on that, I think we are pursuing that on the criminal side. So that's why I'm focusing just here on the civil side. And again, that's pretty much the gist of it. There are establishments. Again, I think we're going to hear from one or two of the establishments today who've been using this program very effectively. Brown Jug in particular has seized over 2,000 fake IDs since the late 1990s. Establishments that are big enough, like Brown Jug or Chilkoot's and some in Fairbanks, they'll pursue the civil damages themselves. But the smaller ones now, smaller establishments, they go directly through CHAR, and then CHAR will do this for them, again, for a fee. So that's all this bill is attempting to do, is just to raise the penalty, civil damage penalty, from $1,000 to $1,500, and then allow the option of a judge recommending that the person also go to a training course. Okay. In a nutshell, Madam Chair, that's the bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Did you want to add anything, Christine? Okay, is there any questions from... No? Okay, seeing no questions, then I guess we'll go ahead to testimony. Off-net, we'll move to, is it O.C. Madden, who is currently online?
Yes, my name is O.C. Madden. I'm with Brown Jug.
Okay, could you state your full name for the record, please?
O.C. Madden III with Brown Jug.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Director of Operations for Brown Jug. I've been involved with this civil penalty process right from the beginning back in the late 90s. And we have, I just looked real quick, I think we're right at 2,100 IDs that we have seized from minors since this went into effect back in the late 90s. And we've been aggressively pursuing civil action against minors and against adults who buy for minors since that time, since these laws have come into effect. And I feel that they're extremely effective laws and that it's worked very well. And I know for a fact that through our efforts and the efforts of other licensees, that we've been able to prevent a lot of tragedies from occurring. And, you know, I would strongly urge the passage of this bill. A lot has changed over the last 10 years, and costs to collect have gone up, and it does involve a significant amount of time. And so I would urge the passage of this bill, and I'd just open it up and see if anybody had any questions I could answer for them.
Committee members. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Mr. Madden. And let me first just say thank you. I know Brown Jug in general and you specifically have been leaders in this area. You made Brown Jug into sort of an example of what a good corporate citizen is with respect to fighting underage alcohol abuse. So I just want to start by saying thank you. I appreciate that. I know other members of the committee do as well. Let me just ask you, how many of these IDs do you suppose you seize in a week? I mean, 2,100 is a large number. I'm just trying to sort of reduce it down to something I can work with. In a week, do you seize 5, 10? How many do you know?
Actually, it kind of varies depending on the season. We'll seize more around St. Patrick's Day, for example, than we will this week. So it varies. I think we're looking at maybe, anywhere from 150 or so a year, something like that, so maybe three or better a week.
Okay, I can manage that. Now, tell me, does every single one of those result in you pursuing a civil remedy against the young person that brought the ID in?
What we do is we initiate the process by sending a letter out to the minor demanding payment, and then we initiate discussions with the minor and try to evaluate each on a case-by-case basis. And, some instances it's pretty clear that it does not require, our efforts are not required to move forward with it. But if there's alcohol involved or if there was an adult buying alcohol for a minor, we do move forward with it.
But just so I'm clear, an adult buying alcohol for a minor, is that what this is meant to grab, or is this meant to grab bad IDs?
I think it addresses both. It mentions in here in Section 2, a person who's attained the ages of 18 years or emancipated minor who violates the statute, Alaska 41660. That statute deals with minors who solicit adults to buy for them and adults who order or receive a beverage from a licensee for the purpose of providing to a minor, I believe.
So, okay, I mean, this is a good clarification. I can see you're absolutely right. This is about, you know, the Hey Mister laws, as Senator Meyer has been done a great job of branding these. I know what to call them now, and it's helpful. So it's more about adults who are buying for minors. So what's the connection between that and a fake ID? I mean, I don't need a fake ID to go into a liquor store. Neither does most. Neither would an adult who's buying for a minor. What's the connection between that offense and bad IDs, if any?
There are two sections to the bill. Section 1 deals with Alaska Statute 41649E. Alaska Statute 41649 deals with illegal entry of a licensed premise by a minor. So that's where the fake ID part comes in.
Okay, so there's two things happening with this bill. One is young people presenting false IDs, and the other is adults buying alcohol for minors.
Actually, three things. There's the fake ID part, there's the part entering licensed premise, And then 41660 deals with two issues. The first is minors who solicit adults to buy for them, and the second is adults who order or receive a beverage from a licensee for the purpose of providing to a minor. So it's a really good bill in that it encompasses all three of those areas.
Sure. And just so I'm clear again about the civil actions, you pursue civil actions against kids who present fake IDs, and those are the easiest ones to detect. How do you detect adults buying for minors? I mean, when tell me sort of what a typical case looks like.
Our security department does surveillance on stores and looks for profile transactions where we may have someone buying for minor. An example would be that, you know, we only do this with trained security personnel. But we'll do a surveillance on the site. We'll look for a car that's, for example, parked a long ways from the front door when there's clearly parking close to the door available, where there's multiple parties in the car and one comes out to make a purchase, the rest remain in the car, those sorts of things. And we'll actually go up to the car and ask to see IDs and check the IDs of the people in a vehicle, make an inquiry of the person who's in the store, see if we can determine if they're purchasing alcohol for minors. And if it is, then we contact law enforcement.
Thank you. Last question. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the latitude. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to guess, and maybe you can confirm for me, that if you're seizing 150 IDs a year, three a week, those are fairly, I don't mean to disparage them, but they're simple cases to make. You know, a young person comes in and presents a false ID, and you grab it, and you're off to the races. How many cases a year do you think you make where... it's the harder case to prove, where it's an adult buying for a young person who's outside the liquor store, you know, not on the premises or nearby lurking in a car and so forth?
I don't have a statistic for that. I think overall, I know that we've done over 100 of those. I think probably a rough estimate since we started doing this, probably, you know, 100 and 150. I couldn't be exact on that. It's been a number of years that we've done that. And I don't have an exact number on that, but it's a very effective tool, and that the minors who solicit adults to buy are liable, and then the adults that order and receive are liable as well. And those arrests that we have made, a pretty significant number of the people involved, the adults involved, actually had prior offenses, and quite a number of them were actually sex offenders that had positioned themselves at malls or skating rinks or wherever to be available to kids so they could purchase some alcohol. And those instances where we intervened were really, really, it was very, very fortuitous for the kids that we were where we were when we were there and prevented a problem from occurring.
Absolutely. And Madam Chair, I thought of one more question if I could.
Follow up, Mr. French.
Thank you. How many of these cases do you turn over to the police? This is about civil actions, but how many of these cases, do all these cases go to the police, some, and how do you decide?
We do turn as many as we can get turned over to the police. A lot of times they won't come to the store. You know, they consider it, if depending on their workload for the night or whatever they have going, they may determine they don't want to send an officer to the store to deal with a minor. In all of the cases where we've caught adults buying alcohol for minors, officers have responded. That's considered to be a more serious offense. And we've turned all those over to law enforcement. Currently, our practice is, when we seize an ID, that we call the police and wait for the police and surrender the ID to them at that time. But a lot of times, you know, the attitude is that we get, it's really, it's at the discretion of the officer. He can, in a lot of cases, they just give the ID back and say, hey, don't do this again, you know. In which case, the kid's free to just go to the next door down the block and do the same thing over again. This provides an avenue that the licensee can use. That's a very effective tool for dealing with these. And some of the things that happens here is that when we send those letters out to collect, it gets the parents involved. Even if the police weren't involved in charges against the minor, when they get the letter from Brown Jug, the parents are involved at that point. And it also, the kids network with their friends. They tell their friends, hey, you definitely don't want to do this. This is something that, you know, they're coming after me now for $1,000, and hopefully at some point here in the near future it'll be $1,500. And it really gets the word out to the kids. And, you know, it encourages licensees to get involved. And we pay a bonus to our employees as well. We use part of the civil penalty money. When we're successful in collecting against a minor, we pay a bonus to the employees, which drives this program and really is an effective component of the program.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. I'll just say in closing, and thank you, Madam Chair, maybe we should add a provision that makes kids post the fact that they got busted on their Facebook pages. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator French. As always, great questions. I believe Senator Myers would like to pose a question to you too, Mr. Madden. Please stay on the line.
Sure.
As well as Senator Passavant. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, OC, for joining us today. You do a great job of explaining this program, this concept, much better than I. And I'm glad you and Senator French fleshed out that this also pertains to adults buying for minors. I think having an 18-year-old child at home, I focus more on the youth trying to buy. Not that she would do that, but. And also, I think you made the point that when you do catch adults buying for minors, it is a more serious penalty, and the police do seem to pursue that, and the prosecution. So, but with the kids, as you said, they just kind of get a slap on the wrist and go on their way, and then go to the next establishment and try their fake ID there. So, and I also just want to reiterate that I appreciate. You and Brown Jug being assertive in pursuing minors trying to purchase, and again, adults trying to purchase for kids. I've been in your establishment where somebody was buying something, and your clerk actually went to the window to look out to see, you know, where the car was parked and who was in the car. And also been in your establishment, not that I go there a lot, but I've just been impressed every time I've been there, in the sense that one gentleman had a whole bunch of stuff he was buying, and he had red eyes, and your clerk refused to serve to him. So again, I guess no question here, just appreciation for what you're doing.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Next we'll go with a question from Senator Passavant.
Yes, my question is more of a technical nature, and while you are in the package store premises, my understanding is that the definition of premises is any premises open to the public, whether it's beverage dispensary, package, pub. Is that the intent?
I believe it is. I believe it's any event where you have a minor that is illegally on licensed premises, and 41660 deals with fake IDs to some extent. A minor in, like, say, a restaurant that orders a beer would be soliciting an adult to provide alcohol to him, is my understanding, and would be covered by this. It's legal for a minor to be on a restaurant premise as long as they're with a parent or adult spouse. And, not entirely. I don't deal directly with restaurants. I'm more familiar with the laws dealing with package stores. But I know a minor can be in a licensed premise with a parent or adult spouse or court-appointed legal guardian. This would not apply to them.
Okay. Again, particularly for the beverage dispensaries, the intent of this is to apply to the beverage dispensary, your standard bar.
That's correct.
And I agree with you, and it's been a problem in Alaska for decades that I am personally aware of, that the criminal enforcement of minors on the premises was non-existent to low. It was always the last priority, and so that's something that I have personal knowledge with for, decades and decades. So I think that this is it gives the owner of the premises the ability to take direct action, and so I think it's the right thing.
Mr. Madden, I'm going to now yield a question over to Senator Kukesh for you.
This is probably not one that's directly related to the bill. I've never seen many fake IDs. Do you have to go through a training, or do you put your staff through a training to see to be able to focus on a fake ID? And are they, some of them, pretty sophisticated?
We do put our staff through pretty significant training, and our training is, we're required by law to put them through every 3 years. We actually do it every 12 to 18 months to keep everybody fresh. We have close to 100 IDs that we've seized that we use as training materials here. Some of the recent ones that are being seized are extremely sophisticated. They're made, they obtain them off the internet or from kids with really sophisticated devices and card making devices that are pretty incredible. So we have seized a lot of those, and they are, some of them nowadays are very sophisticated.
Do you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Madden, how many employees do you have at Brown Jug?
Roughly 174.
I applaud you for taking the lead on all this. I believe that would be the questions then from you. We have someone else online, and so we'll go ahead to Carol Hartman. Thank you, Mr. Madden.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carol Hartman, and I'm testifying in favor of SB 194. I'm the Vice President of Anchorage Char, and I have two liquor licenses in Anchorage. And over the past couple of years, we have, our security personnel have caught about 23 to 24 minors attempting to gain access to our licensed premises. APD's been called, and the minors have been arrested, and we followed through with the civil penalty process in each of these cases, which can be very time-consuming and labor-intensive to the licensee. Anchorage Char recently implemented a program through their office where they'll handle the entire process for the licensee for a small fee, which really helps. But underage drinking is a very serious problem in Anchorage, or in Alaska overall, and the consequences of these minors' actions and behavior are really traumatic to their families as well as the public and our businesses. And I think there should be more severe penalties for these minors that continue to attempt and purchase alcohol or attempt to enter a licensed premises. As a responsible owner, I am upset that the minors continue to jeopardize our licenses by breaking the law, and they need to be held accountable for their own behavior. As an owner of a liquor license, if I mistakenly allow a minor in my establishment or serve them alcohol, I could face a fine up to $10,000 or a year in jail, as well as closure of my establishment by the ABC board and even the possibility of having my license revoked. And I don't feel that a $1,000 civil penalty is enough of a deterrent to the minors. I think the amount of the civil penalty should be raised to a minimum of $1,500, and that there should also be some type of mandatory educational classes that each minor should be required to complete. I understand you just said that they can't require that, but they could certainly recommend it. And it also may help to deter the larger percentage of these minors if there was a penalty in place that would allow their driver's license to be revoked for a period of time. And it might even be a bigger deterrent if the penalties and fines were raised or even more strict for repeat offenders. And that's kind of my take on it. A lot of this stuff's already been covered, but we have a beverage dispensary license, it's not a restaurant designation, so we don't have the problem of a lot of underage people being allowed in there. But it really jeopardizes our business when these minors try to get in or try to get somebody to give them a fake ID to allow them to get in there.
Are there any questions of Ms. Hartman?
Just something that's...
Senator Pascban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just something a little off the direct subject of the bill, but, you know, I know that the ABC board conducts sting operations, and I was just wondering if potentially if the licensed premises nabs the minor, but then they find out that it's part of a sting operation, that maybe you would give a credit to the licensed premises for, you know, seeing that positive enforcement. And that it's not part of this bill, and I'm not making a substitute, but it's something to think about, that if you do have a licensed premises that's showing that they are responsible, that possibly they should get a credit of some sort.
Okay,
you know, do the carrot, not necessarily always the stick.
Did you want to comment on that, Carol?
Yes, the ABC board does issue you a letter just saying that you were in compliance. You know, you don't know sometimes when the sting even took place, but they will follow up with a letter about a week or so later saying that there was a sting that took place at your operation and that you passed it.
Okay, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time, Carol, to come and testify. At this point, we're going to open up to public testimony, and Christine, you're such a bright staff person. Did you, you should say something to add to this bill.
I have no comment at this time, Madam Chair.
Okay, Christine, thank you.
Madam Chair, just as a technical point,
Mr. Pesvan,
and maybe addressed also to Senator Myers, let's assume that a minor is sent into the premises as part of a sting operation. Should we exempt that person somehow from, you know, technically the owner could retain them, prosecute them, but they're part of a sting operation, and I don't, in other words, I don't know that it's been thought out, but
Senator Meyer.
I'd almost prefer, I think that's a good judiciary question, but I think kids who are involved in the sting operation, and I've been involved somewhat with kids buying tobacco, you know, underage, I think they are, I think they're protected. I don't think you can pursue them both criminally or civilly because they're acting on behalf of the state of Alaska. But I don't know.
Senator French.
I have a similar memory, and this bill does go to the Judiciary Committee, and I'd be happy to just make sure that's all squared away before it leaves there.
Is that of your satisfaction? Is that enough information? Senator Pesvan, are you okay? Senator Kukesh.
I bet the only person I can really answer is our technical person sitting right in front of us. We should give her the opportunity. She was nodding her head, so I figured she had something brilliant.
Senator Kukesh, through the chair, I think that the conversation that Senator Meyer and Senator French had is correct.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll go ahead with public testimony, and I really don't have anybody that signed up, but I always allow the opportunity if anyone is in the audience, and I would ask you to come forward and state your name and your affiliation. Seeing no one jumping out of their seats to come up, I will go ahead and close public testimony. What is the will of this committee on this bill, and do I hear a motion to move the committee substitute? Senator Pesvan?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that we advance the CS for Senate Bill 194 /R version with individual recommendations with the attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Do I hear any objections? Hearing no objections, then Senate Bill, the committee substitute Senate Bill for 194 version R will moves out of State Affairs to Judiciary. And we are now adjourned.